Okay, all right. So I wanted to give I don't want to say an introduction, but I thought it was kedai to explain. The yeshiva has a lot of different muster programs. We have muster vadim, muster shmuzim, muster seder, which now is a muster mizbinus, and muster groups. Right? Is that basically it? Vadim, shmuzim, learning, and groups. Four different muster programs. Chazar shmuzim. Okay. Thank you. So the question is to try and explain a little bit what you're supposed to do in each one and what you're supposed to get out. Okay. Now, some people might know already, but okay. Let's start with the... Okay, let's start with Muster Vadim. Muster Vadim, okay. So, the Muster Vad, what is the idea of a Muster Vad? Now, I can't promise every Muster Vad fulfills the requirement, what I'm going to say is a Muster Vad. First of all, I don't give all the Muster Vadim, so I don't know what other people do. But this is what I understand the Muster Vad. Pshat is like this. Many people want to be do what's right, but they find that it is difficult, and they want, like, you want to say tricks, suggestions, helpful, right? You have in the Messias Yesharan that he talks about that there's a maze. So when the person who's sitting on the top of the platform, he can give you tips how to make it through the maze. So sometimes someone who's older, who's been there already, who went through, had the same nisyonos, and he heard many, they can give suggestions. People, it's much basically practice. Instead of everybody has to invent the wheel himself, it's basically practical suggestions to deal with practical problems. I want to daven with kavana. I'm very motivated to daven with kavana. But every time I end up davening, my mind wanders. So how do I go about davening with kavana? Give me some practical solutions. I want to try not to have hirurim roim. But my mind wanders. How do I stop it from thinking about things I don't want to think? How do I get myself to learn with more hasmada? It's not so much to motivate, right? Musar Seder is for motivation. But it's much more down-to-earth, practical suggestions. It's now, regretfully, there is no magical suggestion for most things. And most things are hard work. But even within hard work, there are suggestions. Musar is no different than any other field in life. In any field in life, you ask someone who has experience, and they give you suggestions. You're going for a shidduch. You should never go out for a shidduch yourself. You should go ahead. I mean, you should go on the shidduch yourself, I guess. But you shouldn't just do it, go on. You got a guy who goes ahead and goes on shidduch without anyone to talk to, he's almost guaranteed to get messed up because he doesn't know what he's doing. So you should go ahead and have a mentor, someone, an older person who has knows, understands women, you don't understand girls or women, and he understands how shidduchim go, and he give you pointers. This is what you're supposed to do on the first date, what you're supposed to do on the second date, this is what you look for, this is what to pay attention, this is important, this is not important, right? It makes sense. We are, until you do something, you're inexperienced. People get all flustered about some things and they're not important, and other things that are important, and you miss them. So Musar Vadim are supposed to be practical, not to inspire. We're not supposed to give Musar Shmuzim. That's a Musar Shmuzim. That's what we say. We're not trying to inspire you. We don't, in a Musar Vadim, in my Musar understanding, and I can't say again, everyone is different, but the way I understand a Musar Vadim. The goal of Musar Vadim is not to inspire. A little bit you try and introduce a theme, you try and inspire the guys. But the main, that's more purpose we'll see in the Musar Shmooz, Musar Seder. We want to get the guys inspired. But now, okay, you inspired me, but how do I do it? Don't get angry. But the guy insulted me. Don't get angry. Yeshikayach. How am I supposed to not get angry? Don't be about Gaiva. How can I not be about Gaiva when I know I'm great, right? Some people have that kasha. Some people don't. You know? But there are many people have that I want to be good, but I don't know how. Right? I need so a Muzer Vad is supposed to be giving you suggestions. Now, in my experience, I can't say for sure that Muzer Vadim I want to push them a little bit. There are many people that have expressed over the years that they felt they got tremendous benefits from Muzer Vadim. Now, that doesn't mean that every vad will be tremendous, because certain vad, first of all, even though, you know, by definition, person cannot hit home runs every time. That's, you know, not humanly possible. So sometimes a person gets up, and even if he's the world's greatest speaker, he'll give a speech as a dud, you know, happens. But besides which, even if not, also, not every person is interested in every topic. So one of my favorite Musar Vadim, for example, will be on a topic that a person who is very bashful, how do you work on overcoming bashfulness? I like that topic because I am a very bashful person and I have to work on my bashfulness. So, you know, something that resonates with me and I maybe have a little experience, you know, a little bit, and maybe I could, therefore, someone who has a similar problem, I can maybe help them with some suggestions. Now, there could be certain people here, they don't have the problem of being bashful. That's not their problem. Their problem is that they could use a little bit more bashfulness, right? Right? That's their problem. So they're coming, sitting into this van about what to do, how not to be bashful. They're going to sit there, oh, this is not for me. You know, they'll be bored stiff. So that does happen. We give a van on how to avoid histaklis and things that aren't mutter. Now, there are some people that don't have a problem with histaklis. Could be. So they're going to sit here in the vod and they're going to be bored. Okay, that happens. We cannot promise that every topic that will be discussed is going to be relevant to every person, because obviously every person is different. So you have to be prepared. It's just like going to shiur. No one says that every shiur is terrific. There's some days in shiur that someone's going to ask a question, and the Rebbe's going to spend time trying to answer his question, and the Rebbe's going to see that maybe a lot of people don't know the answer, and he'll spend the whole shiur on that topic, and you might know the answer, and you'll find the shiur very boring. We did nothing in shiur today. He just went over what I knew. That's right. It happens. Because the goal was for somebody else. So I don't deny there will be some Musar Vadim, which is each person might feel, I did not gain so much. But as a totality, Musar Vadim are very, I really think that they are almost, I want to say the most important, but I would suspect the most important. You know, with the persons where he's most likely to grow, a Musar, is in the Musar Vadim. So it's almost like Chaval. A guy comes to yeshiva. A person comes to yeshiva because he wants to grow. And now he says, oh, but I can cut 15 minutes. I can cut a half hour and get an extra half hour of sleeping or whatever. But it's silly because you came to yeshiva to grow. You know, it's like the Chafetz Chaim gives this beautiful mashal. It's one of the Chafetz Chaim's most beautiful mashals. There was a Jewish merchant, and he had a store, and he would get merchandise from the Geisha farmer. So the farmer would deliver bundles of food, whatever, back, you know, let's say wheat. What does wheat come in? Bundles? Okay, bundles of wheat. And now, of course, the guy can't count. because, you know, he's a guy. So how does he figure out the cheshbon of how many bundles he's going to give that the Jew has to pay him for? So they work out a system. The guy delivers his bundles, puts his bundles into the Jewish warehouse, and for every bundle he puts into the warehouse, the Jew takes out a penny and he puts it in the dish. That's how they count, you know. So you put one bundle in penny, right? Then, when they're finished, for every penny, the Jew gives them $10, $100, okay? That's the system, good system, okay? So the guy brings in one bundle, puts out a penny. Another bundle, puts out a penny. Another bundle, puts out a penny. You know, brings in 150, right? You know, finish bringing the bundle, so the Jew goes out for a second to straighten out the warehouse. You know, the guy's sitting there by himself with this dish full of pennies. Jew's not around, quickly grabs a penny, sticks him in his pocket, right? Okay. So you're stealing, right? That's the Chavetz Chaim Basher. He has it for a few things. But you're stealing from yourself. So I really think, I'm making a big push, but I really think that there are people that cut the Musar V'Adam. The main, you know, they're not hurting the person getting the Musar V'Adam. It doesn't really hurt someone. But the main person you're hurting yourself, because really people gain tremendous amount from the Musar V'Adam. Because the Musar V'Adam is very often, you know, I say not always, but very often, you hear a suggestion that makes something so much easier. You know, I can do that. And instead of having to figure out everything yourself, you can hear a suggestion that worked with other people. Okay, that's a Musar V'Adam. Okay. Now let's go through the rest of the Musar. We have a Musar Seder, which this year we started Musar V'Sfeidus. Now I have no idea what that means, so I don't know if anyone else knows what it means. So we'll try and explain it a little bit. I'm not sure if Rabbi Sharpling will agree with my explanation, but what can I do? There is a, you know, I'm not saying, whatever. I'll try the best I can. There is a famous question. Oh, Rabbi Baum, maybe you won't be either. I'm in trouble. Okay, I agree. We ready? We explained why Musar V'Adam. Now we're moving on to Musar Seder. There is a classical question: why is it that people do averus? In other words, let's say I like ice cream, right? I do. I like cake, chocolate cake, right? Now I walk into the dining room, and there's one piece of chocolate cake. Looks really good. I'm about to eat it, and it says, oh, I don't know if I would eat it if I was you. There's a guy here who has, what's a good illness? Zika or something good, tuberculosis. And he was standing next to us, and he was coughing right on top of this cake. I don't know if there's any germs on it, but I don't, you know, there might be. I don't think I'm going to eat it. As much as I like chocolate cake, if there is a possibility that there's tuberculosis on this cake, I'm not eating it, right? So why in the world do people do averus? Okay, so let's say I don't believe 100%. You believe 90%? You believe 80%? I don't think there's anyone in yeshiva in Beis Medrash, maybe high school, but in Beis Medrash, who doesn't believe in Hashem 80%. No? 80%? Okay, but they don't. But you don't think they. If they weren't believing 80%, they wouldn't be here. They would be, you know, in somewhere else.
Different.
Yeah, different. No, not in a different branch either. But they would be somewhere else, right? So the guy believes 80%. I think that's pretty good. 50%, right? For 50% tuberculosis, I wouldn't eat it. So why are you doing this aveira? Why are you speaking the Lashon Hara? Why are you doing something, you know it's wrong? I say, Mom, I'm talking about, you know, really even bemazed, okay? Sometimes people do averus, and they know. I know I shouldn't be saying this, but, you know. So why are you doing it? I know I shouldn't be bothering now, but so why? So you can't say it's because you're lacking in intellectual emunah, because you wouldn't eat it if it's tuberculosis. That's why in the yeshiva we're not always such big fans of working on a moon. We don't spend time bringing proofs and Torah codes and this, because we don't even know if it's so important. If most guys in yeshiva, if they have 75% emunah, so you move it up to 80%, like, what did you accomplish? 75% should be enough anyway. The reason why, according to the Bavli Musar, people do averis is because there's some kind of gap between the intellect and the emotions. That most people, there are exceptions, there are people that have trained themselves to be intellectual people. But most people do not act according to their intellect, as much as we like to think otherwise. But we don't. A person is, a person sometimes will say, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm doing it anyway, right? Classical example. I had a terrible stomach ache all day. I spent half the day in the bathroom. It was in pain. I had an ache. Finally, I'm getting a little better. Oh, okay. I make up my mind, I'm not going to eat supper. I'm just going to eat toast for supper. I don't want to take any chances. I walk in the dining room, and they're serving my favorite supper. Oh, something, I don't know what is my favorite supper. No, not chicken. Something really good on the stomach. Chowy. I don't know, something really, rough on the stomach. I'm sure, I'm better, my stomach is better, it's already better, Now, where's your brain? Come on, you're in pain, you've been in pain all day. Like Tyrant says, when you have an emotional taiva, your brain shuts off. That people, as much as we are about gaivas and we think that we are intellectual people and we function based on our intellect, very, very often we function based on our emotions. And our emotions cause us to believe things that are intellectually not right. If we would ask a guy, why are you eating this? He would say, oh, because I'm better. And he might even believe it. But he believes it only because he has what's called a negiah, right? So your emotions affect your intellect. So the Bavli Musar therefore said that the problem why people do averis is not so much that they don't know sometimes, but it's because they don't feel. It's not part of the emotionally, they have drives and are not so kosher, which are overpowering their intellect. Therefore, a large part of Musar is to get into your emotional being, to get into the depth of your being, to get into your heart, not just your brain, but your heart. Now, that is very hard. How do you get something into your heart? It's a very hard question. How do you get something into your heart? It's in my brain, but how do I make it part of my heart? So there's not just one, like any good thing, there's more than one way to skin, what's it called, skin a cat, okay. I don't know why we skin a cat, but all right. But there's more than one way. So there are different ways. All those different ways are called Musar B'Sbaydus. The traditional Musar B'Sbaydus means you learn Musar with a niggin, you have a dark room, pitch dark, the lights are out, you shuckle, you scream, and the music and the emotion and the tone makes it very emotional, and therefore it goes into your heart. Now, it does work for some people. For some people, it don't work. Why? Because some people, they just, when they do that, they feel stupid. They feel like they're, who am I fooling? It depends. It depends on the person. It depends on your maturity. It depends on your age. It depends on the environment. It depends if every other person's doing it. Some people can do it. Some people, they listen to music and they can really get emotional. And some people can't. So if you can do it, that's the classical way of Musar B'Sbaydus. Musar B'Sbaydus in the classical way is to read the Musar in an emotional way, with a tone, with a where they, you know, you go over it over and over again with a certain music. And but there are other ways to get emotional, which for most people are much easier. One way they talk about is Kayach HaTzir. Kayach HaTzir is visualization, right? Seeing is emotional, much more than here. Intellectual is not emotional, but seeing, right? A person can watch, I heard such a thing. A person can watch a movie and start crying from just watching the movie, if it's a sad movie. Right? What do you think? It's not even true, but somehow you cry, you get emotional. So seeing, so if you can visualize, there is a midah, the Bali Musa were very big on visualization. Right, and those are, I did with somebody once, a Musa Seder. I think I did it in the summer. I don't even know if the person's here or not. There are people from Kiva Eger. Kiva Eger was like the most intellectual person in the world. He has a whole long piece of describing what it's going to be like on the day you die. There is absolutely no intellectual chiddush there. But he's going step by step what it's going to be like and how they're going to put you in the grave and start shoveling the dirt. And how your wife's going to cry, and then she's going to go leave you, and then just forget about you, and marry someone else. And your favorite chair, someone else is going to be sitting on. And, you know, he basically just describes, there's no intellectual chiddush, but it's very emotional. He visualized death. So, right? Most people don't visualize death, so it's emotionally, we don't feel it. So, he visualized. He didn't write. He didn't use a chant. He didn't use music. He used the power of visualization, describing, going through the steps. You can try and visualize what it is to have Olam Haba. Now, we don't exactly, but what is if you had $1 million, they had $100 million. If I do that, this mitzvah is like $100 million. That's called visualizing. Instead of saying it's a lot of schar, it's like $1 million, $100 million. This is amazing. This one mitzvah I'm getting for this mitzvah, you know what I'm getting? So you try and visualize it to some extent. Person can get emotional through visualization. That's a second way of doing Musar B'Shvaitis. You're getting its bitis from the visualization. There is a third way, which is the most common way, done in Yeshiva Chofetz Chaim. A person can get emotional when you see something beautiful, right? People who appreciate music, when they hear a beautiful piece of music, they get emotional. People who appreciate art, when they see a beautiful picture, I look at this picture, I look at it and I say, oh, my kid could have done a better job, right? But someone who knows something about art will sit there and look at it for a half hour and stare at all the details, and wow, it's amazing, the intricacy and the beauty and the chokmah that went into this piece of art. It's so amazing, and the guy gets so emotional, right? That's what happened. I remember, that when I was dating, so we used to always try and figure out where to go on a date. So there used to be these free concerts at Carnegie Hall where they would have these, you know, some people would be violinist or something, someone would come on. It wasn't like a big guy. It was like one person would put on, you know, the guy is trying to become a famous musician. So he would perform free. I don't know if it was Carnegie. It was some kind of, maybe off Carnegie Hall. I don't remember. So I used to go, and I didn't ever appreciate music. And I would sit there, and I would almost think it's funny, like, hey, you know. And everyone would go, shh, you know, because everyone is so intense because they appreciate it. When you appreciate something, they're mamish, they were the people were, you know, they were in seventh heaven because they understood and appreciated. Anyway, the same thing is when you hear a schmooze, when you even read something, if you delve in to the concept and you begin to understand and you see the beauty of Torah, a person can get emotional about the beauty of a chazal. You hear a beautiful shmooze, and especially how that beautiful thought was in that one little Rashi, and they spent a half hour developing it and pulling it out and showing it and It's all there, and it's mukhrach, and that's what Rashi's saying, or that's what the Messias Yesharim is saying. And it's so beautiful. It's like Niagara Falls, you know, or it's a beautiful piece of music. A person should be able to get... I get emotional sometimes in shir. Such a beautiful pshat. Didn't we say a beautiful pshat in shir? Somebody, you know, depends which shir. Won't tell you which one. But sometimes, I used to go there with this Rav Shi and say, better than ice cream. Well, that was his favorite expression. Better than ice cream. He's get very emotional about the learning. He was the most, this Rav Shi was the most intellectual person I ever met. But he used to get excited about his learning. You can get emotional about an intellectual thought when you really understand it well. So that's also Musar B'Sfeidus. Musar B'Sfeidus is to delve into the Musar, to understand it, to see what Chazal are saying. Right? You get a clear clarity, helps you get something. When you know something clear, it gets into your emotions. You get clarity when people have things vague. So all Musar B'Sfeidus means it's not such a hard thing. It just means if you're able to sit there and scream and make a niggin and shake, chuckle, great. But it just means try and take to heart. It shouldn't just be in the intellect. It should get from the intellect to the heart, either through visualization, through getting excited. This is so beautiful. This is depth. This is insight. Sometimes you say your own schmooze is the best way to get Musar B'Sfeidus, because people get excited about it. So if you make a diak in the Messias Yesharim, you make your own little insight. Because when you do, I discovered something, gets you excited. It's a very good trick for Musar to go ahead and make diukim in what you're learning. I have my old Messias Yesharim when I was in my first year out of Beis Medrash. It's full of notes. I would not read them because I don't know what kind of shigas I wrote. But I made all these beautiful diukim in the Messias Yesharim. I don't know if they're good or no good. But that's how I got excited about it. Because, oh, I got to do this diuk. And, oh, you get excited. Right? Okay, anyway. That's Musar B'Sfeidus. Then we have another set of Musar, which is called Musar Chaburus. What are Musar Chaburus? And Musar, even Shmuzin to some extent. Shmuzin is a little bit different. There's a famous story. This is a brainwashed story number, I don't know what. The story is about when Rav David went ahead and met and had a conversation with a malach. Right? Anyone know that story? It sounds like a good brainwashing story. He didn't just meet a malach. He met the malach. Right? The malach was that Rav David was the Rosh Hashiva before he started Chavetz Chaim. He was Rosh Hashiva in Tarvidas from 27 to 33. And in Tarvidas had the frumest group of people in America. And the frumest group of people in America at that time was a Hasidish group called the Malachim, because they were tzaddikim. They were tzaddikim. Rabbi Weberman from Miami Beach, his father, was a Malach. Rabbi Weberman told me that his brother was kicked out of Tarvidas because he refused to wear his tzitzis under his shirt. And they were afraid that it was going to turn people off because... you know, they went in there for they had it. They kicked them out for being too from Tarvidas. Anyway, so he was the Malachim was obviously the frumest group in America. They were obviously in Tarvidas. Where else would they learn? They were the ones that started Chal of Yisrael. You know? And the head of the Malachim was the Malach, the Hasidish Rebbe, who was obviously a very big tzaddik. So Rav David had apparently some disagreements with some of the guys in the yeshiva. So he figured he should talk to the Malach himself and they should have it fight it out, right? So he went to Spring Valley. That's, you know, that's like near Muncie, whatever, where Malach lived. And he had this big debate between the Rav David and the Malach. And Rabbi Rakov was there. I mean, Rakov, I don't know, the one from Detroit, I think. Anyway, was there. And he said that the debate went like this. The Malach said, "Oy, America is such a terrible Medina. There's no Yiras Shamayim in America." And Rav David said, "Nein, you're wrong. There's plenty of Yiras Shamayim in America. There's no Torah in America. In other words, they had a big debate. What's the problem? Why? What is wrong with America? This is in the 1930s, 1920s, I don't know. Is it because people don't have Yiras Shamayim, or they don't know what's right? The Malach felt people don't have Yiras Shamayim. We got to work on Yiras Shamayim. Rav David felt the problem is people are misguided. Americans can be very sincere, but they don't know what to do with their sincerity. So they will be gay rights and abortion and civil rights and any other cause, right? Some of them good, some of them stupid, some of them averis, right? But because they're motivated, they're driven, but they don't have direction, right? My father used to always say, he was a rav of a very big shul, the hardest thing is to get people to give staka to a good cause. To get people to give staka to a bad cause is easy. Because there's certain things, the people give based on their emotions and you give them certain things that, who wants to give to an ani? Right? Ani, yeah. Can't give him a fun. And a real ani comes to you, he's dirty, this, he's that, he hasn't had a shower for a month, I'll give him $1. Oh, but something which is much more glamorous, you know, for the JCC, oh, I'll give $1 million, right? For the, it's very hard. People are misguided. So one of the big, we believe that the biggest averis that people do in life is because they're misguided. That's a scary thought. A person can go through his whole life being sincere, motivated, driven, and at Acher Me'ev Eshem, you say, very nice, you were Meiser Nefesh, but for the wrong cause, right? An Arab terrorist blows himself up. That's Mesiras Nefesh. He ain't going to get Gan Eden for that, you know? I'm sorry to disappoint him. He thinks he's going to get some kind of Gan Eden, but we don't think when he gets up there that he's going to be in for a big surprise, right? You know, we think. So just because he was sincere and motivated enough to blow himself up and to give up his life does not guarantee he's going to get what's right. So you can have from Jews like that too, that I was very sincere and very motivated and I worked hard, but were you working hard for the right causes? Were you working hard for the right things? So the Hashkafa, this is what Rav David argued with the Malach, that most people don't know what Hashem wants them to do, right? They don't know what's Hashkafically right. Right? In so many things, a guy sits and learns. Does Hashem want you to learn Bekiyas, or he wants you to learn Ian? I'm sorry. Right? Does he want me to sit and lock myself in a room and be in isolation and be separated from the world? Or does he want me to be Harbatzis Torah? It's a hard shaila. If I lock myself up in a room, I can become a big tzaddik. If I have to be in Harbatzis Torah, you know? Does he want me to move to Israel and be in a settlement and on the Gaza or whatever? Or, you know, there are people that will say yes. People will say no, you know? You speak to people. I had relatives. I had a relative told me. He says he doesn't understand how I can be from in America. Like, you're not keeping the most important mitzvah in the world. Like, what are you doing in America? Like, why in the world? Like, how can you be shomer? Like, what's the point of being religious in America? Like, you know. So everybody has a different hashkafa. What's the most important? What are you supposed to do? What's the meaning of life? Anyway, so the ma'isa, the purpose of the vadim, the purpose of even the musa shmuzim and such, is to teach the guys right hashkafas, right? Okay, that's three. So we got Musar. The Musar Vad is to give tricks. Talk Buddhas. The Musar Seder is to get emotional, to get it into your, deeper into your being. The Musar groups, the Musar groups are to try and give the guys right hashkafas. And now we're left with Musar Shmuzim. Musar Shmuzim are a little bit of everything. But they're just, they're to get you emotional. little bit. They're also to give you right hashkafis, a little bit. But there is a third thing, which the Musar Shmuzim are very, very important. The Musar Shmuzim are a person, Be'ez Hashem, leaves yeshiva at some point in your life. And the yeshiva hashkafa, okay, we'll say this, we'll go off a little tangent. What is, everyone talks about the Chafetz Chaim Derech, we are weird, right? What is the essence of Chafetz Chaim Derech? What makes Chafetz Chaim different than every other yeshiva? See, I called it a yeshiva, but every other yeshiva, right? So what makes Chafetz Chaim different? So there is a basic difference. The basic difference is that the yeshiva hashkafa, I don't say every yeshiva, some yeshivas are like us, believe it or not. But the basic difference is that the yeshiva held that the ikar of yeshiva is not to learn, but to learn how to learn. That's the main 99% of the difference. Yeshiva held that the purpose of a yeshiva is to teach skills. Because be'ezras Hashem, most of your life you're going to be out of yeshiva. When I told the guys a classical example. It's a true story. I was in Israel. We were doing Tukfa Kohen. Tukfa Kohen is the hardest sugya in Shas, probably. And we were spending a long time at it because it's a very hard sugya. And Tukfa Kohen, there's every sheet there's a region has a different shot in it. And we were being medayik in Rashi, which is very unclear what Rashi sheet is. We were medayik in his Rashi. We spent like a month. It's about two blot sugya, going through all the Rashis and showing how Rashi learned the Gemara, and we worked it out, and we based on certain diukim, and it was gorgeous. And there was one guy there in the shir who was never really got into learning, and he really got into the sugya, and he figured out, and he was so excited. So he decided his father had a certain Rosh Hashiva that he gave money to. He's going to go tell him over the shir. You know, he found out the whole month shir, Tukfa Kohen. You know, okay. He tells all the guys this year. He thinks that Rashi will be very impressed. He says, okay, fine. And what'd you say about the Shvir Rambam? Because there's a world famous Shvir Rambam on Tukfa Kohen where he basically paskins the opposite of the Gemara. And everybody, that's the most common talk on Tukfa Kohen is the Rambam. But we didn't do the Rambam. Why? Because I wanted to teach the guys how to learn. You can't, very hard to learn how to learn from a Rambam, because there's no Minei Ubei in a Rambam. A blot of Rashi, Medayik, and this Rashi, this Rashi, this Rashi, you learn how to learn. So the guy didn't know that there was a Shvei Rambam. They said, what Rambam? This Rosh Hashiva, he blasts him, you crazy guy, you learn in a crazy yeshiva, you spent 2 months on Tukfa Kohen, you don't even know the Rambam. But the answer is, I wasn't trying to teach him Bekiyas Seder. I was trying to teach him how to learn. Right? So he doesn't know Bekiyas that there's a Shver Rambam. Why do I care? My goal in this year was that he should learn how to learn. But this other Rashiva thought the goal of this year is to give the guy information. To give him the information, how can you not know the Shver Rambam, right? I hope I'm making sense. So the same thing is in everything. The goal of a shir is to teach the guys how to learn. Everything in the yeshiva, from A to Z, revolves around teaching skills. We have a Mishneh Berurah Seder. There are certain yeshivas where they have lectures for Mishneh Berurah. You'll gain 100 times more information because you go through lectures and they'll tell you Maran Day Shaydas and they'll organize it for you. And it'll be very, you know, instead of having to read Mishneh Berurah, it talks about cases from the 1800s or 1700s or 1500s when the Mechaber was talking. It's so complicated and it's not even relevant. But the problem is, if you go listen to a lecture in Halacha, you'll know that maybe the Halacha is called man, you remember it. But when you get home and you have a Shaita, what do? But if you learn Mishneh Berurah for 5 years, you learn how to bask in a Shaita yourself. Eventually. When a shayla comes up, you know how to look it up. That's the skill. We want to teach the skill. So Musar Shmuzim, we want to teach a skill. But Ezra's Hashem, guys are going to be out of yeshiva. When you get out of yeshiva, you're not going to have anybody giving you Musar Shmuzim to give you inspired. You're not going to have Musar groups to give you information, to give you hashkafas. You're going to be all by yourself. Scary thought. So how are you going to grow? How are you going to get yourself inspired? How are you going to get yourself excited? How are you going to get an insight into what Hashem wants you to do? We mentioned and shared that the Gra said if you don't grow up, you automatically go down. And that's very scary. You see many people who learned in yeshiva, and after they left yeshiva, they go down because they're not going up. So how do you keep yourself from going up? So one of the answers is Moshe Shmuzim. A person has to learn the skill of being able to say his own Moshe Shmuzim. And it's not such a hard skill. It's not one of one of the easiest skills to be learned. But you learn it when you learn, and that's what we do also in the Chazaras HaShmuz, a certain part, not always, sometimes, to get the skill of how to say a shmuz, so that when you're home, when you're reading a parsha, when you make your own shmuzim. When you make your own shmuzim, it's so exciting. It's so inspirational. Because there's nothing more inspiring than something you did yourself. So you get inspired. You can say Dvar Torahs on your Shabbos table. You don't just say, oh, you stole it from some paper that they gave out in shul. You say over you read a Rashi and you saw the depth of the Rashi, and you come home at the table and you tell your wife and the kids, oh, look at this insight. It inspires you. It gets you excited, and you keep on growing. You keep on seeing more insights. So you gain knowledge your whole life. So there's a tremendous skill of a Moshe Shmuz, which is takes time. You have to hear a lot of shmuzim. You have to go to the Chazaras and shmuzim. You have to see how we take it apart. You have to attack the Rebbe that his shmuz is in Mukhruch. How does he know? How did he know that that's right shot? Now, it could be you're right. Maybe the Rebbe, not every shmuz isn't right. But you see how, and then you develop the skill. Okay, so anyway, we're running late. I said we're starting early so we can run end on time. So I don't want to be a liar. So we have, basically, that's it, I think. We have the Musar Vadim, which is to give the guys practical suggestions, which I think is very important. We have the Musar Bespidus, so to speak, which does not really mean it's by, just means to try and get yourself that the information should go from your brain to your heart. There are different ways to get it in your heart, but taking it seriously, by visualization, by appreciating the beauty, does not necessarily, the hardest way for most Americans is to do it with a tune. If you're in a place where they do it, and maybe in Queens now there's an environment, they do it, you can do it. I don't think guys are going to do it here so much with a tune, but if you can, you can. But the other ways of Musar Bespidus are all work. It's try and indoctrinate in your heart. There's Musar groups, which is to try and give the guys the right hashkafas, because we say the biggest problem in life is people don't know what's right. That was Rav Dovid's arguing with the Malach. And the Musar Shmuzim is a little bit of all the above, because hopefully it's teaching you something, hopefully it's inspiring you, but it's an additional factor, which is also, it's teaching you how to see by yourself throughout your whole life new insights in Torah. Okay. Shikayach.